The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And Chuck Liddell makes his Talk is Jericho debut today. The UFC Hall of Famer and former light heavyweight champ is talking about some of his biggest fights and opponents, including Tito Ortiz and his two legendary bouts with Randy Couture. Chuck tells great stories about cutting weight back in the day in his plastic suits, how he started in MMA in the first place, and the advantage he had the first time he stepped into the octagon. Chuck also talks about his relationship with Dana White, filming Ultimate Fighter, and competing on Dancing with the Stars. I know what that's all like. Plus, Chuck's got a brand new podcast of his own. It's called Icebreakers. He hosts it with comedian Adam Ray. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch it on YouTube. New episodes out every single Monday. All right, Chuck Liddell is here on Talk is Jericho, starting now. The good news about the pandemic and the lockdown is there's all this technology so that we can still talk and chat, but there's so many of them, it's hard to figure out which one is which sometimes. And Chuck Liddell, we just had to figure it out ourselves.
Oh, yeah, okay. My computer crashed. I'm waiting on, because all this pandemic, I'm waiting on a video card.
Right.
So I'm waiting on that. We're waiting to get one of those to finish putting my new computer together. So I'm using my kid's iPad.
But it worked out, and we're here. We've never actually met face-to-face before, which is strange, but it's cool to have you here.
Yes, yeah, it's good to be on, man.
So you have a new podcast coming out, Icebreakers, just to get right into it. And what made you decide to jump into the world of podcasting?
You know, people have talked to me about it for a long time, and, you know, it's a way to talk to people and talk to fans. And, you know, I really hadn't, you know, done anything about it. I never really kind of understood the podcast thing, how you do it, what to do, or
right,
when to do it. Or, you know, I've been on a lot of podcasts, never really got into the actual making of them. So when they came to me with the idea of doing it, I'm like, you know, yeah, I'll try it out. I'll check it out and see how it goes. And it's been fun. We're doing, got started, and we're going to, I think we'll start putting them out pretty soon.
Are you pretty much dealing with UFC stuff or just kind of guy stuff?
Just guy stuff and just whatever topics we kind of go, kind of flowing through different things. And we'll cover some UFC stuff, obviously. I mean, I'm always going to, mm-hmm. you know, not to mention a lot of my stories or anything that comes up during the conversation. A lot of it has to do with mixed martial arts or UFC because that's been my life for the last, you know, 30 years.
Well, it's interesting, just kind of to jump into it. We're talking about lockdown and all that sort of thing, but one of the kind of the first events that we're having in the States is UFC in Jacksonville, which is where I work out of. And, you know, they sold 15,000 tickets in 5 minutes or whatever it is. You know, it's kind of cool to see, but how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm excited to have it back to being kind of normal, you know, I think it would have been really weird to fight that way. I mean, it was a little strange even fighting in Japan when you go and walk out, you know, and you walk out, it's
right,
you know, kind of going crazy. But then when the fight starts, it's like you can talk to your corner, just regular volume conversation with your corner. Yeah, okay, what do you want me to do now? Yeah, okay. Yeah. You go, you know, not like normal where it's so loud, you know?
Well, they're very, they're watching in Japan. They're very attentive because it's the same when you wrestle there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's they would, you know, they're a very educated fan base too, because you guy pass a guard and ooh.
Yes.
You know, then so another big, you know, big, you get some big moves. Ooh.
Right.
You know, but they're paying attention. You know, it's really kind of cool, but kind of weird. First time you do it, it's kind of a little different.
The first time you do it, yeah, it's like, this is really like, do I suck? Like, no one's making any noise whatsoever. who did you fight in Japan? How many times did you fight there?
I fought a few times out there. Guy Metzger, Alex Overeem, Rampage.
And you had big crowds?
Oh, yeah. I think 18,000 was the biggest one I fought at over there. But they've had a lot bigger crowds over there, but that's the biggest one I fought in front of.
Well, Japan was kind of one of the initial kind of early days of MMA fighting kind of started in Japan in a lot of ways, didn't it?
Yeah, the two big organizations were Pride and UFC. You know, so yeah, the two big for a long time during my career was, you know, who's the real champion, the UFC champ or the Pride champ?
Right.
You know, there's always that kind of thing going back and forth for a long time.
The rivalry, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, you had such a storied, legendary career in UFC, but it's changed so much since when you first started. Because when you first started, it was almost kind of like an outlaw type of a sport.
Yeah, it was on, like, it actually, I think I was the last, my first fight in UFC was the last one on cable pay-per-view. And then it kind of moved to, like, I still had pay-per-view, but it didn't have, like, the broad pay-per-view. You know, I kind of got away from that for a little while before the Fertittas bought it, and the Fertittas brought it back, you know.
Who was the first owner when you started?
SEG was the company. I forget the guy's name.
So kind of how did you hear about this? Because when did you start? In like 95 or?
98 was my first fight.
98.
Yeah, and really I got into it. I kind of fell into it, really. I was I was kickboxing, competing, mm-hmm. trying to. I finished up school, but I didn't want to get a real job, so kickboxing sounded good. So I was doing that for a while, and then guy asked me if I wanted to do a mixed fight. Nick One Kick, Longgren, actually, the guy got me into kickboxing, got me to do a mixed fight. You want to do a mixed fight? He used to be a pretty good wrestler. You want to do a mixed fight? I said, sure, why not? So I went out and did a mixed fight in Vegas. Turned out to be an open hand slap fight. It was kind of like, it was supposed to be like he's going to do a few mixed fights on one card. It's supposed to be striking, full striking on your feet, and then when you get to the ground, there's no striking, just wrestling. Mm-hmm. But then by the time we got to the fight, it was like, okay, you can slap on your feet, kicks and slaps on your feet, and then when you're on the ground, no striking whatsoever. Originally, we were supposed to be able to do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I went out and fought, knocked the guy out with a head kick, and then the guy in the crowd goes, hey, do you want to fight in UFC? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? That sounds great. And so they offered me a fight in the UFC. So I was in a 4-man tournament. I was an alternate for a 4-man tournament. So I got $1,000 to show up. Second place was 10,000. First place was 20,000. I'd heard forever, you know, about mixed martial arts and UFC and get, you know, why don't you fight in the UFC? I'm like, yeah, how do you get in? You know, there's stories about ways to get in and tournaments and all this stuff that really didn't exist. And I had no idea, but you know, I finally did. Some guys saw me fight, and I got into the UFC, and I went to it, and it was an interesting experience. You know, the first time getting out there, back in the old days, you know, you got there, you flew out the day of weigh-ins. You know, they fly you out the day of weigh-ins. You know, I was taking, and we connected because it was Louisiana, I think it was. It.
Yeah.
So we're flying in, and so I'd start kind of. The weigh-ins had started when I landed, so I started cutting weight at my connection. With plastics on, and I started cutting weight. So I'm running around, cutting weight, and then I think back to the poor guys that sat next to me on the plane, still dripping in my plastics, and then got off and then cut weight. And we went and weighed in, and I'm fighting Noe Hernandez. He steps on, gets off, and it's a bathroom scale.
Oh, right.
It was a bathroom scale, like, but not like a digital bathroom scale, like one that had a little wheel on it. And so I'm like, really? I cut weight for this. I got on. And I'm like, I'm sitting there at a main weight, and they go, hey, no internet, no, he's 2 pounds overweight. Is that okay? I'm like, on this scale? Are you kidding? I'm a wrestler. Yeah, on this scale, he's fine.
Right.
He'll be okay. I'm like, get him back over here. I'll show him how to be on weight. He's got to move around a little bit. I'm like, I was kind of one of those things like, man, I mean, the big, I just thought I made the big time. You know, I'm going to fight on TV and UFC. And then I got the bathroom scale. Actually, what a funny story with that, too, is like the first time the video came out, I think it was a Blockbuster video. We went in there and I saw it on the thing. I made the cover of the video, right?
All right.
And my first word, I'm on a video. And I got the video, rented the video, took it home, went to watch it. They cut my fight out. I was the first fight of the night on pay per view.
Uh huh.
But for the video, they cut that fight out. Like, so I didn't make the video. So I'm on the cover. I did not watch the video, did not make my fight, did not make the video.
Damn. There's so much that you just spoke about there. So you used to start your cutting the day of the weigh-in?
Yeah. Well, I get my weight to a reasonable amount of water. I lose my water weight. I didn't like losing more than like 10 pounds of water weight. Mm-hmm. I made mistakes cutting weight sometimes. I've done worse. Way worse. I think the worst I did was a 19 and a half in a day.
That much of a cut?
And one day. It was one day.
In one day?
One day. And I had to weigh. It was a day of weighing, too.
How do you cut 19 pounds in one day?
All water, a lot of sauna time and plastics. But it wasn't easy. And I was cramping when I was warming up for that fight.
Oh, my gosh. So plastics would be kind of like a plastic sweatsuit?
Yeah, it's like a plastic suit. It's a plastic, all, you know, put your sweats on over it. It keeps all that heat in and makes you sweat really fast. You know, I got good at it my end of my career. I mean, I liked cutting like 10 pounds, 8 to 10 pounds day of. And I do that in like an hour and a half. It'd be easy, in an easy work, just kind of warm up in plastics.
Wow.
Because I was fully hydrated, I can drop a lot of water weight fast. But like, and actually, the way they do it now, they weigh you in the morning and do a ceremonial weigh-in later. Because they used to weigh us in at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever the real weigh-ins were. The ceremonial weigh-ins were the real weigh-ins.
Right.
So you had to wait till then. So, and I actually would get up around 11 and start cutting out rest that weight, cut the weight off. Because I slept in through my whole career. So it would have been weird for me to have to get up and cut weight in the morning.
Right.
You know, because now you have to get up and wait, make that weight in the morning. I guess I go back to sleep, but it messes with your timing. Like I always slept during training camp. I go to sleep about 2 o'clock. I get up about 11.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I adjusted my sleeping time. I always felt like I'm performing at 9 o'clock at night. If I'm going to bed, normally going to bed at 9 o'clock at night, my body's getting ready to go to sleep.
Right, right, right.
I extended that to, you know, I have my last workout about 8:30 at night, and then I go to sleep about 2.
Mm.
So I think it'd be really weird. It would have been weird for me to be, now I got to break my, I'd have to go sleep early because I got to get up early to wake. It'd be a little weird. I don't like messing with my sleep schedule that much. So it would be an interesting change to, I don't know, with the weight cutting.
So when you mentioned that Hernandez was 2 pounds over, does that make a big difference in a fight, 2 pounds?
It depends. I mean, at our weight, and we weren't, I mean, he wasn't cutting a lot of weight to get there. I mean, he wasn't like one of those guys just really cutting weight. I mean, I think at 200 pounds, I don't think that makes a big deal difference.
Right.
I don't like when guys don't make weight. I mean, if it's, you know, these guys that miss by 5-10 pounds, they don't even try. If you're not going to try, tell me. You know, tell me ahead of time. Let's agree on fighting it. Let's agree to fight at 205 or 210 or 215, whatever you want to fight at.
Yeah, but tell me beforehand, right?
Yeah, because that was 199 back then. Because it was when before they shifted to 205. It was 199.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So who was kind of your first fight that put you on the map? Because Chuck Liddell, like we mentioned, legendary career, one of the main event marquee names for USC. So was it Kevin Randleman or was it Bustamante? Like, what was the fight that kind of put you on the map as a big name?
For that, it was I knocked out Kevin Randleman, a guy I met here in 3 weeks.
Ah, wow.
I knocked out Kevin Randleman. Well, it was a big surprise. I think I was a huge underdog. He's coming down from heavyweight champ. Moving to 205, going to take over 205.
Right.
And then I knocked him out in the first round. It was a minute 18. So that was like big shock to everybody. Whoa, who is this guy? And then when I went to Pride and I fought Guy Metzger, who was a really tough fighter, went over there and fought him, and I knocked him out. And I was like, oh, hey, man, this guy's for real. It's funny, actually, Kevin Randleman came up to me after that on the way back. He was in Pride. He was out there. And we were going back to the airport, and he's like, "Man, you know, I was really bummed out about getting knocked out by you, but you're pretty good." <He's not> like, well, thank you. Just sideways compliment. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it was pretty funny.
How were you able to fight in Pride when you were also fighting in UFC? Because you mentioned there was a rivalry between the two.
Well, it was a different thing. They did it was like a three-way negotiation right after I knocked out Kevin Randleman in a minute 18. Pride needed someone for that fight. I Metzger, they asked and asked the UFC, and then they kind of we did a three-way negotiation because I was negotiating my new contract.
Gotcha.
So it's like I had a two-tier contract with the UFC, so they're basically paying me to go over there. So they paid me twice when I got paid. They got paid twice when I got paid to fight Randleman to fight Guy Metzger. Then they also from there, I had a two-tier contract. If I beat Guy Metzger and went this way, if I lost and I come back, I'm still on contract with them, but I'd be on a different path.
Sideways, right?
Yeah. So it worked out. I went out there, I won. I always bet on myself. So went out there, won, and it worked out good for me.
Now, that's a pretty quick turnaround to have two fights in 3 weeks, right? That usually is not the case.
Yeah, it's usually not the case, but like for me, like if you're healthy and you're like, it was almost like I was healthy coming out of the fight. I didn't get hurt at all. It was just all I had to do is I took a week off and took a really light week and then put in a game plan and was off to go fight again, get paid again. So it was almost like getting paid twice for one camp.
So when you're talking about now you're kind of a big draw and you had so many classic fights. I mean, you know, you can kind of go through the list with Ortiz and Overeem and Jackson and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who were some of the guys that were your best rivals, shall we say?
Well, obviously the biggest one was always Tito. You know, he was dodging me and I think back and forth, and he was always trash talking, always saying something stupid. Yeah, he brought me up whenever he fought. Like I wasn't even fighting him; he'd bring me up. But the biggest one was Couture. I mean, that was a big one for me. You know, he's a really tough fighter. And I have a lot of respect for him as a fighter. And we coached the first season Ultimate Fighter together. You know, that was a big deal. I think the Ultimate Fighter obviously launched us into, you know, the popularity we are. I mean, I always thought this sport would get there. I mean, that's really what launched us into being mainstream really quick.
Why do you feel the Ultimate Fighter did that?
You know, I think it got people able to try it out, try it out for free. You know, they didn't have to pay to watch it, and it became like, and then you get to see, learn how there were fighters, learn people's personalities, you get associated with people, you know people, you start rooting for people because kind of get to see who they are and see who they. How much work they put into it, and then you know it didn't hurt that we had the Forrest and Bonner fight. It was an amazing fight. I mean, that was just amazing back and forth, tough. You know, kind of showed all the different elements of MMA, and it was we couldn't ask for a better fight to end that show.
Yeah, it was just one of the all time classics, right?
Right. You know, there was a lot of things fell into place, and it, you know, for me, you know, then I went out the next week and got to fight Randy again and get knocked him out the way I like to, you know, and win that fight in a quick, impressive fashion. So that really launched everything.
Did you notice, like, were people recognizing you on the street, and kind of were you noticing that you're kind of breaking through to the mainstream, so to speak?
Oh yeah, it was night and day. For after we did that show, it was night and day. I mean, it was like it went from me being able to look through a mall and go, okay, that guy probably knows who I am with the tap out shirt on, and that guy probably knows who I am.
Right,
that guy over there. People walking by, I've got no. Like 50-year-old lady, hey, great fight the other night. Like, just random people just walking. Hey, can I get a picture? Hey, can I, you know. So, yeah, it went in that fast. Just from doing that show, you know, and then winning the title, you know, it just exploded.
You know, you mentioned that you thought that UFC would always get that big. Why did you feel that? Because like we said at the beginning, it was kind of painted with a barbaric brush and you know, you couldn't get sanctioned and all this sort of thing. What about it made you think it would get breakthrough to the mainstream?
I mean, it's just a great sport. I think it's an amazing sport. If you like combat sports, you gotta love it.
Right.
Maybe watching it, you love it. But I think it what it needed was what, you know, Dana and the Fertittas did. They went in, they got it sanctioned. Instead of running from place to place where they could hide from being sanctioned, they went out and looked to get it sanctioned. Like, we need to get this sanctioned and get it approved in these states. And they were able to do that. And here, that's where we are today.
When you talk about Ortiz, and you said he kind of had a little bit of a, I don't know, shall we say like an Ali type thing to him, where he would say a lot of trash talking and all that sort of thing. But that's just promoting the fight, right? Like, that kind of adds more drama and mystique to it.
Well, with him, I always thought like it was always more of a personal thing, and then it was always, you know, he seemed, he had that attitude outside the ring and outside when you're not, you have guys that'll do that, and, you know, had guys go, hey, man, they'll talk trash right before they come in the back room. In the back room, they're like, you know, hey, what's up, man?
Right.
Hey, how you doing, Chuck? Hey, man, set it up for you if you want to fight, you know, go ahead, go back out. You know, guys like that, you know, it's great. You know, it's cool. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not a big one for big trash talking flashy guys. I get it. You know, guys like Conor McGregor, man, he does a great job getting in guys' heads. Mm-hmm. I always say that the Aldo fight, like when he fought Aldo, he won that fight in the trash talking.
Right.
He got in Aldo's head. Aldo, I've never seen Aldo run across the ring and attack someone like that. Ran across the ring, attack someone like that. Aldo's a guy that feels you out, kind of beat you up out and then out, figures you out, and then destroys you. You know, picks you apart, destroys you, stays back, boom. And I thought maybe he could beat him with those leg kicks. I thought maybe that would be a way to beat him. But, you know, when he ran across the ring and just got, he ran out trying to kill him and got caught, you know. So, but, you know, and I get that. And those guys are, when you talk to him out of the ring, they have a little more class. You know, Tito was always... you know, he's kind of a, and like, you know, stuff, he said stuff, weird stuff, but, you know, I remember once he said something about, I don't date white trash bitches like Chuck on a radio interview in San Diego. He wasn't even fighting me. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? You don't know my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You don't know who I'm dating. You don't know, why are you going to mouth off like that? And we actually had a conversation about that later, just because people asked me to squash it at a club. My group, they're getting a little heated, so asked me to squash it with him. So I had to talk to him. I actually went up to him. I said, look, man, first off, my girlfriend, apologize. Second, you ever talk about my family and friends in a radio interview again? I swear to God, I'll come to your house and beat you in the living room. You know, you got that? So I'm sorry, man, I wasn't talking about her. You know, whatever. But, you know, he's just kind of a knucklehead. I wish him, the funny thing is, everyone thinks I hate him. I don't hate the guy. I wish him the best. Mm-hmm. I hear he's a great, great dad to his kids. I mean, he's doing his thing, man. But, I mean, I don't like the guy. I don't, but anyway, but it just really doesn't matter. But I just don't hate him. I mean, I wish him ill will. I hope he does great. I hope his family's great.
So you mentioned that Aldo got it in his head with McGregor. How do you keep that from getting into your head when you're getting ready for a fight?
Not liking someone or fighting someone I don't like, it helps for motivation for training, makes it easier to get up every day and train hard and do all that things. But like for a fight, I think emotion clouds judgment. So when I fight, I don't fight with emotion. I'm not angry at you. I am trying to end you. I'm trying to hurt you when we're fighting. Mm-hmm. But when it's over, I hope you're all right. You know, so I am out there trying to hurt you, but I'm trying to, in a very calculated way, I'm trying to set you up and trying to figure out how to hurt you.
Well, boxing is like that. You know, it's such a chess game and waiting for, you know, the guy to make a move. And you mentioned kickboxing, you mentioned wrestling. Are you doing the same? Are you waiting for someone to make a move? Are you watching their body, their eyes, their head? How did you do it?
Well, you're watching everything, and you try to I'll throw things and see how they react to this. Do they react to that the same? Okay, I throw it again. Do they react to it the same way? Okay, now I'll throw something almost like that, and then throw something different. You know, it's like used to throw, you know, kickboxing. I did kick KOs in kickboxing.
Wow.
And they're all from me kicking the leg, and then I fake the leg and come up, and I throw it almost like that, you know, with a little kick, round kick up, and catch right in the head, bang. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but it was just that fake, you know, but I'm always throwing things out. It's almost like a ball team that has like set plays so I can figure out your defense. And, you know, again, there's things I play with to see what, okay, how's he react to this?
Right.
Okay. How's he react to that? Okay. Now I try to make it look like that and land something else. Yeah, if I can get you, when I do this, he reacts to that. Okay, boom, this hit. He'll be there next time. So kind of just changing things up.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of different things. Or just like, I know you throw certain things that we've seen in the film. Like, okay, when I do this, he'll back up and do this. So I'll just set up a combination for that. Mm. I think that one when I kicked Babu in the face, we worked on that because he did this big thing when he come in throwing punches up top, throwing punches. He threw him like this and shoots. Mm-hmm. So I just started like boom, boom, boom. And keep coming up, caught him right in the face.
And that's it.
And that was it. Yeah, I was over. But we actually put that in for that game plan, for that camp. We put that combination in. We'd set it up from that was watching film.
So you watch a lot of film then and kind of get a sense of what a guy's habits are?
Yeah. And then that's kind of where you set up where ahead of time you're setting up where his habits are, right? You see what his normal reactions are to other people. People react to different styles and different things. So now you go out and see, okay, he's going to react that way to me too. Okay. You can try it right away. Boom, boom. Okay, yes, there it is. Ting, ting. It's really quick. Mm-hmm. It's just different playing with different ways of playing, feeling guys out different ways.
Gotcha.
Like, the more information you have going in, the easier it is to, because then you don't have to start with nothing. If you go fight a guy you've never seen before, you know, first time, now you got to really kind of feel him out and play him out a little bit. But if you've seen him a bunch before, then you can kind of start ahead of the game.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk about some of your most famous fights. I was kind of looking through some of them and pulled some of my favorites out and just kind of get your thoughts on a few of them. I mean, maybe one of the greatest fights in UFC history is from 79 versus Wanderlei Silva. Do you feel that's one of the greatest fights in the history of UFC? I mean, kind of critically acclaimed as being.
I think it was one of those things that was so anticipated and so waited for so long.
Yeah.
And I really think, you know, because they didn't have the five round, that should have been a five round fight. I mean, I wish back then they weren't allowed to. It was just the title fights were five rounds.
So what was it? Just three rounds, or
it was just three rounds? So I think nowadays it would have been a five round because it was semi main event. That they would have made it a five rounder too. And I think both of us would have liked another two rounds. I mean, we're both still going at it. We're still ready to go. You know, it was a great fight and. I wish it happened a few years before that when it should have, when we were both holding titles. That's when it really should have happened back when we were both champions. And you know, he was a pride champion. I was UFC champion. And it would have been, and they talked, there was a little talk about them putting this together back then. And I think that would have been better. But it was great to finally get that fight in. You know, that was like the one fight that, you know, had eluded me that I'd wanted for my whole career. So
why did that fight not happen back when he was in Pride? Just political reasons?
Yeah, just because the two companies weren't they didn't intermix too often.
How about Couture 2, Liddell Couture 2? I think that was after you guys.
That was the one right after Ultimate Fighter. That was, I just won the show. My team just won the show. And then I got to go out there and beat him. And I think it was the first time, I had a pay-per-view bonus after I hit a threshold. It was the first time we hit the pay-per-view bonus threshold where I got pay-per-view bonus on that fight too. Mm-hmm. It was pretty awesome.
And was he one of your, like you mentioned before, what was it about Couture that made him one of your kind of favorite rivals?
He was a great fighter. Came down from a heavyweight champ, you know, and beat me in that first fight. And, you know, I knew I could beat him. I knew what I needed to do. And I finally got another shot at him. And I got to go out there and beat him. And you know, he fought some really tough heavyweight fighters that were great knockout guys and hadn't been knocked out. I was the first guy to knock him out. And so that was everyone asked me what my favorite fight was. If I had to pick one, that would have to be it. Because I finally got the title, I got to avenge a loss. And I was beat up. At that loss, I was devastated by that loss. Not because I lost to Randy, but because it let Tito off the hook. He was maybe not gonna have to fight me now. You know, he'd been dodging me and now he wasn't gonna have to fight me. I was really bummed about that. So that was one of those things that, you know, having Randy, get that shot back, get that title.
What do you feel your best fight with Tito was?
Well, the first one was my favorite. I got to go out there and beat him up.
You knocked him out, didn't you?
Oh yeah, knocked him out shortly after the second round. And you know, I had a torn MCL in that fight too. If you go back and watch the fight at the end of the first round. I could throw a kick at his head. I throw a kick at his head. And you don't see it, but I'm walking back to the corner. I'm saying, okay, don't limp. Don't let him see. I don't want to give him any confidence. I want to like feel it because it was like I hit it wrong. It would like seize up kind of like I would have a hard time walking a little bit. So I was like, okay, don't limp. Concentrate. Don't limp. Get back to the corner. Not kicking again. Done kicking. That's enough kicking. Then part of the next round, shortly after next round started, I knocked him out. So I threw like 23 punches in like 7 seconds, last 7 seconds of that round. I landed probably most of them.
It's interesting that you say that, though, like when you're talking about don't, you know, in wrestling we call it sell it. Like don't sell the leg. Don't let them know that your leg is hurt. Do you have to do, or did you have to do that quite often in your fights to kind of mask an injury so they don't go after it?
Well, not that often, but every once in a while, we always went in with some kind of nick or knack. You know, training for fights is hard. You know, training camp's harder than the fights most of the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I fought a couple times torn MCLs, but I really with injuries, I was really pretty lucky. For my career and all the time I've spent, you know, doing wrestling and football and fighting, I think. All in all, I got through it with a pretty healthy, you know, and didn't have any major injuries, caused me major problems.
It's hard. Like you retired in 2010.
Yeah, 2010. Yeah.
Right. So, and then you came back for the fight once again with Tito in 18. Was it hard to come back 8 years later and get back into that mindset of Chuck Liddell, the legendary killer?
It wasn't hard to get back in the mindset. I mean, I love being back in the gym, back training, back doing it. I love that. But, you know, just getting everything back. And, you know, I really didn't realize I needed neck surgery before the fight. I didn't know I had worn out like the disc, right? So slipping, so it's tapping. So I lost balance, my equilibrium when I closed my eyes.
Right.
So I'm balancing with my, I use my eyes to cheat and balance. I couldn't stand on one foot with my eyes closed.
Oh, wow.
Because afterwards, I went to get some stem cell stuff in my shoulders down in a bioaccelerator down in Columbia. And they helped me out. I got both my shoulders was great. I mean, I used to not be like, I got to the point where I couldn't take my jacket off. I'd have asked my wife to take my jacket off for me. But now, I'm back to normal. It was really great for that. But then I had him do stem cells in my neck, like middle of my back, because that was hurting a little bit. And then I did my knee. And they did a MRI before they did on my neck, on my back and my neck. And they're like, have you had any MRI? Have you had someone look at this? Because you probably get someone to look at this when you get home. Because I need something done. I'm like, no, I'm fine. If they ask me, do you have any problems with your balance or coordination? I'm like, no, I'm fine. They're like, okay, well, maybe you need to check that. So I waited about a month and a half after I got home. My wife finally goes, Chuck, you're having problems with your balance and coordination a little bit. You should go get this checked. So I went and got an MRI. I'm fine, but whatever. I'm going to go to get an MRI. So I went to get an MRI. Had my doc look at it, and he's like, so you're having problems with the balance and coordination. I'm like, why do people keep saying this? I'm fine. I'm good. I just fought. I'm fine. And they're like, he's like, well, really? Do me a favor. Go stand on the other side of the room. Now, close your eyes and walk me heel toe. And I like try to take one step. I'm like,
oh, wow.
Like, whoa. Then I tried again, couldn't do it. He's like, come, okay, now come over, stand on one foot. And I touch your nose. Okay, now close your eyes and do it.
Like, really?
Yeah. And like, oh, damn. Okay. So what do we do? And like, and then they had, basically got around, they had to fuse my neck. But it's better now. Like, and they said, it's fine. It's just one level fusion with it. But, and now it's fine. I mean, I did walking out of the, like after the surgery, I wasn't the best line I walked, but I could walk a line with my eyes closed. It's pretty good.
So you never even realized it until they pointed it out to you, right?
Yeah, I didn't realize it. And I'm like, well, you know, you just kind of feel like, it was one of those things where I was going back to training. You feel like, well, I'm coming back after 8 years. I've lost a step here and there. And maybe that's why this isn't working exactly like it used to. And, you know, but it's all right. I'm doing good. I thought I got in great shape and I was ready to go for the fight. And, it's what it is.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Did you step back from the sport in 2010?
Well, you know, the thing was, is that people, you know, everybody was telling me they always had reasons why you can't, your chin, you don't have the chin you used to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you used to be able to hit me out with a brick and I see it keep coming out. You know, and I started it, and my last fight that when I lost to Rich Franklin, you know, Rich Franklin is a guy that should be able, isn't a guy that should be able to knock me out with one punch. He's a guy that can knock you out with a couple of them, and, you know, put something together and knock you out. But him not catching me, and I think I might have knocked myself out a little bit with that headbutt too. But
right,
but still, I wasn't able to take a punch like I used to, and I had a lot of people give me reasons why, but not tell me how to fix it. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if I can't compete at that level, I didn't want to at the top level or trying to prove that I was really what I was trying to prove is that I was the best at what I do, and so I can't compete at that level. I was kind of, you know, I was ready to be done. So you know. Then I came back in on it. I thought, well, maybe with all that time off, maybe my brain healed, and maybe the stuff over there make it easier. I can still take a better punch. But obviously not. So it didn't work out that way. So,
do you have any nagging injuries now from your time fighting? Because you had like so many wars in that octagon.
Well, I mean, I had a partial knee replacement. I had my neck fused, but other than that, I mean, and my shoulders are beat up. You know, they said. But that nothing I need surgery on. I mean, they stem cells really helped that out. Actually, I'm really it's one of those things. For that injury, it worked great. You know, they did a great job. But I can still do everything pretty much. For what I put my body through, I feel pretty blessed.
I know a lot of guys that have gotten the stem cell treatment. That seems to be a really kind of a big healing element in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's really hard to say I don't know what it helps for and what it doesn't exactly. I'm not sure exactly, but for my shoulders, it was night and day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't put my suitcase up in a overhead thing in a plane. I mean, because it had gotten to that point with my shoulders. I'm like, you know, I had problems with my shoulders all through fighting. I mean, I remember before Randleman, I think I shot this one up 3 times and this one up twice. Mm-hmm. before fights. But actually, that was actually before, that was all before the Ultimate Fighter. And then at Ultimate Fighter, I think I went and got checked, and they looked at both my knees and talked about me getting surgery because I was having an issue inside my knees. I tore my MCL 3 times on one side and twice on the other. Mm-hmm. So I had problems with my knees. And then I went into Curl and Job, and I went into the doctor in Vegas, and he said, I think you need surgery on both knees to get it fixed. And I went into the guy, Curlin Job, but he sent me there to go get a second opinion. And they said, well, normal 5 years ago, we would have done surgery on both, but now we found that surgery, you know, it's 50-50 whether it does anything better. So do me a favor and go home and ice after every workout and before you go to bed, and tell me if it does any better. They started doing any better. And they started doing a lot better. So I thought, well, you know what? I have that problem with my shoulders whenever it ramp up for a fight. Did they get sore by the end of it where I have to shoot them up? Mm-hmm. Maybe if I ice them every day, and once before I go to bed, they'll get better. So I started doing ice baths up to my neck.
Oh, wow.
I do 2 a day. I do one after afternoon training, and then one before I went to bed. And I didn't shoot my shoulders up again for all the way to, that was from 2004 to 2010. I never had to shoot them up again. And my knees worked better. I started kicking again more, a lot more. So, I mean, that icing after every workout really helps.
Makes a big difference, right?
I love ice baths. I mean, now don't get me wrong. I'm not a masochist. I do not like them for. It sucks. It still sucks every time I get in one, but they saved my career for extending it for a long time.
Wow! So an ice bath can do that for you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're doing it every day, it helps with all the little injuries, and I think it for me it helped. This is like a wear, like a, you know, there's a lot of volume. My shoulders should be. I do a lot of volume. They started getting hurt real bad. So keeping that volume up, it doesn't keep getting swollen more and more. So
how long do you stay in the ice bath for?
Well, I used to do 20 minutes all the time. Now that they say, I mean, I don't think you need to do that. I mean, I think 10 minutes is fine. I got 20 minutes in my head for a long time, and I just did 20 minutes. And part of it was just kind of get in it, and every 20 minutes sucked.
Right.
But it's never got any better. I got an ice bath when I did that Ultimate Expedition show. I got in the river, 34 degrees.
Right.
Like my ice bath right around 55, 58. It was 34 degrees. And I told him, I'm going to do 10 minutes. And I'm like, when I got in there, I'm like, man, did I just tell him on camera I'm going to do 10 minutes? Damn it. I guess I'm going to do 10 minutes. This is cold.
In Canada, they call that the Polar Bear Club.
Oh, yeah. It was cool, though. I mean, made me feel better that day.
What was your relationship with Dana White, and how did you enjoy working for him, with him?
Dana was my manager. He came in that before they bought the UFC. He was my manager.
Oh, wow.
Actually, he managed me and Tito at the same time. So we had a friend, mutual friend that introduced us to him. And you know, Dana was the guy that went out and was trying to get, you know, other sponsors, like in other publications and stuff. He's trying to get us in something other than Black Belt Magazine, or not that there's anything wrong with Black Belt Magazine. I was really stoked to be in Black Belt Magazine because I grew up reading Black Belt Magazine. So, that was cool for me. So, but getting crossover stuff, he was really into getting it. And I did a lot of things I've done over my career, and which helped me extend my career past the UFC, has been the crossover stuff I did trying to promote our sport. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of stuff, like even like Dancing with the Stars. I think you did that, Dancing with the Stars too.
We are a Dance with the Stars alumni. How'd you like that?
It was interesting. You know, it was one of those things that you used to tell your body what to do, it just does it. Mm-hmm. and it was dancing, it doesn't quite, it's not quite the same.
Right.
It's like my natural reaction, like to get, I get behind on steps is to get in a, an athletic position and get there.
Right.
Well, once I get out of that standing straight up position, and I start bending over and getting there fast. Now she's got to travel three times the distance to get to where she's got to be. You know, so I mess her up. I think in a later show, she actually said, she called me up, she texted me, called, hey, I'm sorry, I just called you, said you're like a Sherman tank. Like, I'm like, I don't really consider that a...
Yeah, it's not really a cutdown.
That's okay with me, I'll take that. But she's like, because she was saying, you know, she can't backlead us. Like you have probably the same problem. Your dancer can't backlead you. You go the wrong way, she's got to go. I mean, at my size, like with a little dance, she can't just pull me back into my spot. You know, so she was like, I can't, like, with the guy, and that's what she basically said. She said that, he's like, I'm out there, if he goes the wrong way, we have to go that way because he's like a Sherman tank. Like, I can't just move him.
Who was your partner?
Anna Trubinskaya.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. Yeah, to me, the thing that got me was just how much time you have to put into it to really get to some semblance of decency. Like, you have to be in there 8 hours a day, 7 hours a day, like 6-7 days a week.
Oh, yeah, I was in there. I think she was getting tired of me. I mean, I was trying to get moves down. You know, it's not easy. And then, you know, I like, it was one of those things, like, as soon as I get something down, she adds something to it. Mm-hmm. I go, now I need your facial expression to be better. Now I need to. Okay.
It takes a lot of guts to do that, though, man.
Yeah, but I thought, what other show, like, is not our demographic? You know, that's definitely not our demographic. And, you know, it's a great crossover for us as a fighter. Like, bring people into, you know, seeing their work. Trying to, back then, you know, a lot of people, the thing was, we were like, still people thinking we're like a bunch of Neanderthals. Yeah. So they, you know, get those people thinking you're a regular person. You know, we're still a normal person. I'm a father, a guy, kids. You know, it's like, it's a cool, it was a cool experience.
And talk about people knowing who you are. I mean, that show was a completely different level of fan base for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's when people come, hey, you're the guy from Dancing with the Stars. Yeah, I was a world champion too, but yeah, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I never had so many 50-year-old ladies in the grocery store ask me for my autograph until I did that. So are you still an ambassador of UFC? Is that kind of one of the roles that you've put yourself into in this day and age?
Always. I'm an ambassador of mixed martial arts. I mean, I love mixed martial arts, and UFC has been great to me. I'm always good with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the NFL mixed martial arts. You know, it's where the big boys play. So it's always going to be, and they're always going to be some great fighters and great fights at the UFC. So they've been putting together some great cards lately too. So they're awesome.
Who are your favorites to watch these days?
Adam Saya, I like that kid. You know, he's a kid that I really didn't like his dad before I met him. I met him I was in Saudi Arabia with him for a few days. I really, really liked him. Like, he's a good kid. You know, he's one of those guys, you know, very outspoken and gets a little, but he's a good kid. I like him. Who else is the big name right now that I like to watch?
Well, I mean, the big match is coming up is Masvidal, and, you know, he's got a lot of steam right now. He's kind of a big draw.
I always like Masvidal. Masvidal is great. You know, his attitude. All those guys like that. And I love to see Glover. Glover Teixeira is my boy. He's doing really good. I think he's going to get a shot at the title again, and that would be great. I hope he pulls that one off. He's a stud, man. He's just, his attitude about fighting. He's a good dude.
Do you notice a lot of difference in techniques in 2021 from when you were fighting back in 2010 and earlier?
I mean, the sports keeps evolving. Guys get better at mixing it together. I think the biggest part of it is they're getting better at mixing it stuff together and being able to be more well-rounded and being less, you know, one-dimensional. So it's always been that you had to get more and more. But I think as we go, people get more and more. I think still you see some people that don't mix before they go from wrestling to jiu-jitsu to striking. Like, sometimes they get stuck in one, you know, they get overstuck in one. Like, I used to get some of my guys, they're kickboxing guy, right? You go in, the guy shoot on him, he'd sprawl and fight it off, and then he'd body lock the guy. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you body locking him? Like, you don't even know what to do with a body lock. push off and push off and start hitting him again. Stop right. wrestling. Or like I even brought, you'd even drop the single. I'm like, what do you? You don't know what? You don't know how to finish a single. Why are you grabbing his leg? You don't know what to do with that. Like, why are you there? And one of the big things is, you know, most of the guys nowadays are coming in. They started fighting mixed martial arts.
Right.
When we started this sport, you know, everybody usually came from one discipline, either striking discipline, a wrestling, or a ground, and had to learn the other two. And like, I think one of the advantages I had in the beginning was I came from kickboxing and wrestling. Mm-hmm. I had to learn jiu-jitsu. So, you know, I was able to mix things together a little faster because I had two of the elements. And one of them was the wrestling that I was good defense, and I was a really good defensive wrestler, like sprawling, and so I was able to stay on my feet and use the wrestling to strike.
Right. Last few questions for you, Chuck. What is your favorite knockout that you ever gave, and what's the worst knockout that you ever took?
You know, I'll start with the worst knockout I ever took. That's the hardest one to say because, I mean, you go back and look at them.
Yeah.
You know, and you go back and look at them, and you're like, okay. That one looked really bad. Right. That one I ended up real bad. But you don't remember any of them. You know, when you get knocked out, you lose a little bit of time.
Right. Yeah.
You really don't actually remember getting knocked out. So I remember guys that hit hard, you know, that hit hard that didn't knock me out. I remember Vanderlei broke my belt one of the times. I'm being, okay, hey, okay, here we are. We're here. We're in there. And he can hit, man. My favorite knockout, I mean, like I said, it goes back to a Guy Metzger knockout was pretty vicious. Like in IFC, I had to have one, Steve Heath. I had the day of weigh-in. I did, there was a head kick knockout. That one was pretty vicious. We were on stand in the corner worried. Both those two, I was worried about the guys getting up. They didn't move long enough where I was like,
oh wow.
Come on, man. You're right. But they're both fine. But, you know, if I have to pick one, it still goes back to that second Randy fight where I knocked Randy out. And then after that, the second Randy fight where I knocked him out again and proving it wasn't a fluke. It's like he beat me the first time and I knocked him out pretty quick in the second time. And a lot of people were saying, oh, it was a fluke. He just got lucky. And so doing it again in the second one, I'm not sure which one of those is my favorite, but it's one of those two.
Last question for you. What's the fight you're most proud of?
Yeah, I think it comes back to the Randy. I was knocking him out and winning the title I've been after for so long. You know, I mean, it was fun to knock Tito out and show everybody I could do that. I do what I said I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we used to train together and he could do nothing to me in training. He couldn't beat me in a straight wrestling match in training. He just happens to be the style of wrestler that I was matched up perfectly. Mm-hmm. You know, he's my favorite style of wrestler. He's a bully, muscling type of wrestler. And you're not going to muscle me, not in my way.
Right.
So, but yeah, it has to be that's the one that I'm most proud of. I had some great ones. I've had so many great fights. I mean, so many great experiences. You know, going through coming up. I mean, I fought 30 minutes straight in Brazil. My second real mixed martial arts fight. I was 30 minutes straight in Brazil, bare knuckle.
Wow.
One round, 30 minutes. So it was interesting. I would go look back and look at it. There's like a net going from the bottom rope to the side. Uh-huh. And I ended up with the guy stuck underneath the net. Oh. And I'm punching him through the net. You guys, he's like stuck in a net and getting hit in the face with the net.
Back in the early days, you wouldn't get that anymore.
That was like the crazy days.
Well, Chuck, it's been great talking to you, man. Like I said, you've had a legendary career both in and out of the octagon, and look forward to hearing your podcast. It was great to get a chance to chat with you, man.
Yeah, great talking to you, man. That was fun.
Thanks, dude.
Take it easy, brother.